Fandango Podcast 13.12. I can't think of anything for this segment, which is also the number of reasons that Maryland should be in the Big Ten. Not at all. Zero. Bad. What is just going on, man?
We won by a lot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that didn't happen, but it's just like, you know, you play Maryland and you're like, why are we playing a non-conference game? I know they've been in this conference for a decade now, but it's just like, why are we playing an ACC team? Weirdly, Rutgers feels like part of the Big Ten, possibly because they punt a lot and they're massively incompetent in all ways. And also Michigan has lost to them, but like Maryland just rolls into town and then Michigan just beats them with a brick on the side of their head until they die. And then,
well, this is what Maryland does. Maryland should be like, Maryland, like, they'll beat somebody big in the non-conference, right? And like, ooh, Maryland coming, right? And then like October is when the wheels start to fall off. And by you get November, Maryland, it's just a mess.
Right, so 59-18, Michigan was up something like 4 touchdowns in this game at one point, despite yardage being even, and I think that about summarizes it. And you know, I'm not saying this is the right way to feel or like a good way to be, but I retweeted one of our photographers, Patrick Barron, who said like, I really wish I could watch this game and not just and like appreciate it for the fact that we were annihilating a team in a pretty fun way. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. This was a tweet, but all I'm
you're over 255 characters, liar.
all I'm thinking is like, this isn't good enough to beat Ohio State. It's nowhere close. And so like my whole vibe is not great. Even like they have Michigan as a 28-point third quarter. I'm just like, mildly entertaining. Like, but everybody on Twitter after there's like a throwback for a touchdown. From Michael Barrett to AJ Henning on a kickoff, everybody's like, save that for Ohio State. And I'm like, so like, I don't think I'm alone here.
No, but like, there's no way you could say, we'll get that in the special team section. There's no way you could save that particular play for Ohio State. You're not going to run it.
Right.
But yeah, like,
they clearly, I mean, but the only problem I have is it shows that Jay Harbaugh was really preparing for Maryland because he's a good coach.
Yeah.
And I wish that they didn't have anything cool for Maryland. Like, I wish that they had just ignored all of the things that Maryland does. And last week on Ohio State.
I would guess that a lot of that was not necessarily prepared for Maryland. It was prepared for the season. And this is like the game where you dump it all. Because other than that, you get the bowl game and you have Ohio State. That thing was prepared all season if somebody ever pooched it, like a low line drive to Barrett. And let's do that in the special teams.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, yeah. In general, though, no other program has this like sort of Demonocles that hangs over you at the end of the season where you just have to, like, even Auburn, like, gets to win that game, and they're the only one who has this rival who is, you know, built to destroy everybody, but especially thinks you're their enemy, right? Like, there's nobody else in this situation where, like, you come to the end of the season and everything has a pall on it because of this doom. Otherwise, this is a perfect season for everybody.
Sort of Damocles.
What did you say, Damocles?
Okay. Damocles, yeah.
Well, okay.
I was just confused.
It's an ancient word.
Would
the A be like the official the ancient A, not the Michigan A? Sort of Damocles.
No. It's like saying Mexico. I'm not speaking Spanish. People in Mexico don't.
Oh, that would be
Damocles.
All right. Sort of Damocles.
Anyway,
the sort of Damocles hanging over them at the end of the season, Who else has that? Who else has their entire seasons, like, the whole script is we have to walk to our doom at the end?
Nobody.
Right?
Because, like, other sports don't have, like, schedules where it's like, this is always the last game of the year.
Right.
Right? Basketball doesn't do that. Baseball doesn't do that. The hockey doesn't do that. There's not, like, this is when it's played forever and ever. Amen. and no other college football team is like one in a billion against their rivals in one of these season-ending games since the dawn of time. So no, yeah, I think it is a unique experience for Michigan fans where it's like really hard to actually enjoy anything nice happening because you just know at the end of the year you're going to have your foot stuck in a bear trap and then you're going to run over by a lawnmower. Anyway, the Evgo podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out ugpmichiganapparel.com or find our stuff at mgoblogstore.com. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Signal Wire, From the Cheap Seats, which is the Sklar Brothers podcast, Team Fan Club, and Prentice 4M, which is where we usually are, but because of COVID stuff, we're remote.
Yay.
Yeah, they canceled school like on Monday and Tuesday, and they told us 6 days before. And for me, it's like, well, I can be at home and my children can be on screens and that will be workable. But for people who actually have to go places and do things, not great. Anyway, yeah. That's not the topic of our podcast.
Yeah.
the topic of our podcast is Michigan athletics. And so Cade McNamara completes 75% of his passes for almost 10 yards an attempt. Does get a couple of spectacular catches to help that out. Particularly from Andrel Anthony. Andrel Anthony? Jeez, I'm doing it.
you got the ancient A, too!
makes a spectacular catch to get Michigan down to the 5 early in the game. JJ McCarthy gets a spectacular catch from Mike Sainer still on a fade route where he catches it with one hand. What was the third one? There was like a third really spectacular catch that I...
Well, Johnson had one with a guy draped. Johnson dropped one, and then the next play, he had like one where he dug out, where it was like a Jahan Dotson kind of a throw, where it was just like the only place it could have gone with a guy all over him, and then he actually pulled it in. I think that's the only other number one that I recall from this game.
Yeah, and then of course Donovan Edwards has more receiving yards in a single game than Chris Evans had in any single season of his entire career. 170 receiving yards, 10 catches, and of course the 77 yard touchdown on a wheel route, which they tried to put a linebacker on Donovan Edwards, who was lined up a yard inside of Donovan Edwards and had to make his way through a bunch of formations. So that's one of those pre-snap read things where it's just like, oh, this is man coverage, Maryland is dead meat, and Donovan Edwards makes no mistake, neither is McCarthy, and you get a 77-yard touchdown, which is nice because I think kind of up until that point, despite the kind of gaudy numbers by the end of this game, it just felt like a struggle. Like Michigan was scoring touchdowns, but it felt like the overall tenor of the game was just kind of like getting a play here and there and not like the sort of domination that you would expect from this defense going up against Michigan. And I think the thing that is most apparent there is that Hassan Haskins only gets 78 yards in this game, 3.9 a carry.
Yeah, and there were a lot of opportunities to get yards. There was one where they were pulling the tackle, and Ryan Hayes kind of missed his spot, I thought, and then Haskins followed him into the wrong gap where like there was just tons of yards outside. And there was another time where we were running fake reads off the backside, and so finally the Maryland end is like,
There was a 3rd and 10 where Michigan checked into a run, which was a really good idea, but because the backside defensive end wasn't blocked and didn't have to respect McNamara as a runner at all, he just ran after Haskins and was able to trip him up after 5 or 6 yards when that was a first down otherwise and possibly a lot more. So, yeah, it is kind of remarkable how these days it just feels like a slog whenever your quarterback isn't going to keep the ball a few times a game. Like even Maryland, like when their offense felt the best, it was one, when they were throwing like little dink routes to Okonkwo, and then two, when their quarterback was either scrambling or they called some design runs for him. But McNamara is not that. He's emphatically a pocket passer, and so Michigan kind of has to make do.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little weird. I went back on rewatch because I was kind of upset about some of the things that we'd done, and like there were just – Maryland was leaving it open, but Maryland like went hard cover one, and they just had that one high all the time, and I thought they just got Don Browned. The Edwards wheel, we ran that earlier as just a flare. And Edwards picked up a bunch of yards too, just because they weren't covering that.
Rotate.
yeah, they didn't.
Like there was a guy pointing at another guy in the Maryland back seven, and then the guy seemed to acknowledge that he had been pointed at, and then he didn't do anything.
Right, he just stays high. Yeah. And that's weird, but like Maryland kind of has been doing that all year. They're so badly coached that it's hard to give yourself that much credit. But like that was the speed and space stuff that should have been part of the offense all year. I felt like just using that running back in the flat like that put so much pressure on a team that's already trying to clog the middle up. And that was the whole idea. They brought their safety down to, clog that backside up. And if you're going to run the running back the exact opposite way, you're winning the numbers game every single play.
Yeah. So if a team decides that they're going to like load up against the run, it's really hard for Michigan to not have a free hitter. And I think the zone stretch stuff that they've been doing more of does a more effective job of neutralizing that, because the backside guy who isn't paying attention to your quarterback still has a long way to go.
Yeah.
So that was that was Mike DeBoard's theory back in the day when Michigan was like an all stretch team, because if you ran the stretch hypothetically, you got a free block because the backside end wasn't going to be able to do anything no matter what. So the obvious problems for having exactly one run play.
Yeah.
That was the play. That idea.
That was the play that, that Haskins passed 1,000 yards for the season was the zone stretch. Yeah. The backside cut, which is what he didn't do before. So that play is slowly becoming more viable.
Yeah, and then we had another kind of short yardage incident, speaking of Haskins, where Michigan's zoning and the center decides that he needs to climb to the linebacker, and that means that, yet again, we have another situation where Michigan is trying to block a guy who lined up inside of you on short yardage, which never works. So Haskins gets stuffed and Michigan has to go for it on fourth down. And on that fourth down, they're just like, all right, duo, duo, duo.
Yeah.
We're doubling everybody at the line of scrimmage and we're just surging forward. And so like their short yardage approach just doesn't make any sense. And the reason that they're bad at it is coaching.
Yeah. And they ran tempo to get there because I bet you tempo screws with them all the time. But, Maryland lined up. I mean, every other team has run tempo a gazillion times and knows what they're doing. So
right, yeah, and Michigan runs tempo, and then it feels like when they run tempo, they make mistakes.
Yeah.
Like, A.J. Henning gets matched up against a linebacker trying to zone block him, and then, the starter is climbing to a linebacker. So, like, the added tempo for Michigan doesn't actually win them anything because they just process things slower than other teams who are doing simpler things, doing fewer things. So, I mean, Michigan's running inside-outside zone, and they're also doing a bunch of gap block stuff. So they have a lot on their plate, so it's just harder for them to go tempo and then just have whatever they're instinctually doing be correct. So, I mean, that's a reason that Michigan would be bad at tempo that actually has compensations other places, right? So we often complain about Michigan being one of the worst teams against tempo in America, and I think that's a valid complaint. But when you have so much different stuff on your plate because you're a Jim Harbaugh team, I think there's a fairly good reason that you're not a high-tempo offensive team. And then that kind of bleeds over into what the defense is able to do.
Yeah, well, the answer is checks. But you can work checks into doing that. I mean, tempo is, if you're practice getting to the line quickly, then you have time to make those checks. And McNamara is such a great quarterback if you give him some time in the backfield to like make those pre-snap reads. They had a couple plays early on where they caught Maryland in a blitz look. Maryland didn't check out of it. They just moved their receivers in and ran slants. And even though those cornerbacks knew exactly what they were running, the slant was open because you have that leverage, and McNamara can always see that. He's going to get that 100% of the time. So that's like, that's a powerful thing. That's where our coaching is going, I think. That's what we're doing is spending a lot of time preparing before a play to make sure we're in the right play. And they checked out of a couple things. You know, we mentioned the run that got hooked, that got shot down on third and long. But there were a couple other times, too, where they just caught Maryland over with too many numbers on one side. And that was a problem last week that they obviously addressed after the fourth and two, where, like, if you see numbers, you have to check. If they just get to the line faster and use that time to make checks, that would be a much better usage than trying to get to the line and then snapping the ball real quick. Like, see what you got. Also, their QB sneak, and I know I've been hammering this forever, their QB sneak has been the number one short yardage play for them all year. It's been money. Because, like, they slam McNamara into the line, and then he doesn't make it, and then Hassan Haskins or somebody just pushes him in the butt, and that makes it happen. And like, that works because it's using the quarterback in the run game. Even though it's just sneaking it, the quarterback is a run threat. They're still watching the running back. So you're still the same number of guys as the other team. The problem is they just get outnumbered all the time.
Yeah. In the passing game, I mean, McNamara has the big pass to Edwards and then completes a lot of passes, has some checkdowns, gets bailed out a little bit. Kind of feels like his numbers don't match up with how I felt he played, I guess.
Yeah. That's going to be a UFR deal when I have to, like, when I go out and grade all of those. I thought that his checks were very obvious and it made sense what was going to happen. So it's going to be hard for me to grade some of them because they left guys wide open and then he threw, like, a good pass. There's one in particular I'm thinking of where Schoonmaker, the tight end, is wide open because the safety didn't rotate down. So you get this safety up, like, 20 yards. And they roll out. In like America's rollout out, right? And Schoonmaker is just going to be wide open for a couple seconds until he gets to that safety. And McNamara doesn't pull the trigger, and then he comes down, and then he's got to run for a while, and then Johnson has a cornerback right in his butt, and he zings it right to Johnson. That was the pass I talked about already, the Dotson play. So, like, I don't know how to grade those ever because, you know, is it a bad read because he missed the wide open guy? Is it a dead on because he threw a perfect pass that went to the only spot it could have been? Like, what do you do to that?
Usually, if you bail your own ass out, I let it slide.
You know? Yeah.
Like, we are results based charting surface. So that's the results. I mean, to some extent, you know.
Yeah, like, but I mean, and then you get the other side, which is McCarthy, who is a adventure, but the adventures work because Maryland's so bad they're going to break down after a couple seconds.
Well, so, you know, I think we had a couple more runs in this game that indicate that McCarthy is not just a guy who can go get you 6 yards and then slide down, right?
Right.
So he has the touchdown after he drops the ball, kind of like the mini Denard because he's 4 yards out, but it was like reminiscent.
Yeah.
And then he has a run in the third quarter, I think he got a drive in the third quarter, mm-hmm. and one of those runs he, you know, breaks the tackle from a Maryland linebacker and is able to, like, juke another guy and get a chunk run. And we've seen this in a couple of different games where he's a guy who doesn't just go down at first contact. He's got enough wiggle and he's got enough speed where he can really be one of those guys who carries it 8 times a game, and that's a real benefit for your offense. And then there was the hitch route to Cornelius Johnson, mm-hmm. where you just hear it pop on his pads. Like, right. You're like, oh, that's right. 5-star. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting because obviously McCarthy is playing at a level where it's really difficult to replace a quarterback, but
McNamara is.
Yeah. I mean, McNamara is. And then when McCarthy comes in, it's just like, oh, that guy's got upside.
Yeah. So. I mean, it gets weird with this game coming up just because, like, you know, how do you use the guys and what situations you want? Do you want this game under control or do you want it to, like, throw caution to the wind? But one thing we saw from McCarthy in this game is he kept a play going that, you know, McNamara would just thrown that or checked it down, where he hit Edwards after they covered the tight end wheel. And that was a play that we ran last week that worked to Eric Gall. This time Maryland goes with it and Edwards leaks out and McCarthy is, like, scrambling to his left, which is, you know, a crossbody. And like, by that point, you know, McNamara is not going to still have the ball. McCarthy extends that play, runs away from the end, gets that guy down, and then tosses it to Edwards, who is now open because they've taken the coverage away with the wheel. So you get those too. Like, he hits, it's going to be very hit and miss. It's not steady at all. But I mean, if that's the approach that you need, like, if you get down to Ohio State by 21 points or something like Michigan State did, you maybe need to, like, throw caution to the wind and go with that, because you can see it. Like, there's opportunity
Seth,
there.
Seth, if Michigan's down 21 to Ohio State, I think we can just turn the lights out, right? Like, turn the lights out, go home. Prepare for a Rose Bowl, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's I want Michigan to shorten this game either way.
Yeah, that's what they're gonna do.
Yeah.
One last thing for the offense segment. A shout out to Angle Routes. Always a winner in Madden. Is glad I'm always happy to see them pop up. What I want Michigan to do is I want them to bring back. They had that Angle Routes screen, I think, under Rich Rodriguez.
No, Harbaugh ran that.
That was Harbaugh. That's
that was
right.
Harbaugh. He ran that to mess with, because Michigan State always had those double-A gap blitz, so he caught them in a double-A gap blitz and ran that right over them.
Yeah, then there was one against Ohio State that was going to be a million yards, but Chris Evans didn't go to the right side of the block because he was expecting it to be the other guy. Like, the linebacker jumped it because they'd prepped for it, but he still got blocked, but Evans didn't go to the right side of the block. But yeah, so like that little angle screen, I like that. That's good stuff. Donovan Edwards is going to be running it at some point, I bet. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up, you can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment, or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy. It's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at TeamFanClub.com.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication. Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
You can tell everybody, yeah, you can tell everybody, go ahead and tell everybody, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man, yes I am, yes I am, yes I am, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. I believe every lie that I ever told, paid for every heart that I ever stole, I played my cards and I didn't fold, well it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different.
So this kind of fell apart in the second half a little bit, but for the whole game, you know, Tagovailoa passes for 5.4 yards an attempt, under 200 yards. And this is a passing offense that had been able to do a lot of stuff even after their injuries. So that's good. Again, the ground game is just a little bit concerning because, you know, 4.1 yards a carry for Maryland, even if I'm not bothering to remove sacks. Taylon Fleet Davis goes for 71 yards on 11 carries. Coleman McDonald, 68 on 18. Like, this is not a team that runs the ball. And Penn State was not a team that runs the ball. And so I understand that a lot of that is Michigan going against the grain and just having even numbers in the box and relying on guys to make plays. And they don't have guys, particularly on the interior, that make a lot of plays, but this is going to be the strategy against Ohio State, I'm betting, because we saw what happened to Michigan State.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty concerned about Michigan's ability to hold up.
Yeah. The one saving grace is that I went back on a lot of those. When I did the rewatch, I noticed that a lot of the guys who got beat were backup defensive tackles. Like,
oh,
Jess,
yeah, that
Spate.
Does happen. Yeah.
Yeah. And like there was one play live, I'm like, oh, what are you doing, Aiden? And then like you go rewatch it and it's like, oh no, that's Braden. That's Braden McGregor. Like that's not the guy who's going to be in there against Ohio State. And so a lot of their runs were just things like, okay, we're running the backups out there and the backups are not the starters. The other thing I thought we did a lot was drop Josh Ross into deep coverage. Like Michigan just does not want to give up big long plays to Tagovailoa, and it's
Tagovailoa.
I'm never going to get it right. It's been years. With his brother, I never got it right either. Tagovailoa. Michigan was just not going to give up those long plays to him, at least not off the snap, except for a couple times when they almost did. But it was that was their strategy in this game. They're like, okay, if you can run on us, you can run on us. And I don't think they got much against the starters. I think it was mostly against the backups. So it still means bad things for Ohio State because it's going to be a very different level of competition and they have a great offensive line. So, yeah.
Yeah, and there's also the issue where this was not a game for the rampant defensive ends. Mm-hmm. They were getting pressure. You know, Hutchinson flushed Tagovailoa into Gray for that sack. Ojabo drew a holding call. Probably could have drawn some other ones, but the problem there is, like, even if you're being held, it ends up having to be material. And so, like, if you just clamp your arms, your hands on the outside of someone's pads, and they're not able to, like, get off it to the point where it matters to the play, they're not going to flag it. And so I feel like that is something that is on tape now. It's like, all right, how do you deal with this? Well, you just get so flagrant with the holding that it can't, it's not relevant, and so then it doesn't get called. So the one that Ojabo did actually draw is because like he was past the guy and he got tackled by the guy who was holding the outside of his shoulder pads. But he did that part the whole game, and it was pretty effective at containing Ojabo because he's not like a edge rush guy, right? I mean, he's not a power rush guy,
right?
So if you can do that, then you can neutralize him somewhat, and I fear that that's probably going to be the case on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, I hate that I'm advocating this, but just go down. Like, if they're going to grab you like that and you got nowhere to go, you know, start wrenching to either side and go down because that's what's going to draw the flag. It is holding, so, like, it should be called. If that's your situation...
It might be called.
Well,
right?
It
might be called.
Yeah, but if it's not called, you're in a Michigan stadium, they're going to get some loud boos. Everyone sees it when he goes down, right? When the guy has his hands on the outside of the jersey and then the defensive end goes down in the middle of a pass rush, everybody sees it. So I'm advocating that because like that's the only way you're going to get a call in this Big Ten. Now, maybe home game, road game will be different, but I mean, we know it's not going to be against Ohio State. So, you know, that's what you have to do. I mean, Hutchinson all year has been better at, like you said, bull rushing. So, like, even if you do grab his shoulder pads, he's just going to put you into your quarterback's lap. But what they've been doing is doubling him a lot of times and then, or chipping him at least, and then holding Ojabo. I don't know. Like, what else are you going to do? It's literally cheating.
Well, God, my big gamesmanship, you know, Rubbin's racing, right? Like, you know.
Yeah.
Can't call it cheating and then endorse Brandon Watson's tenure at Michigan.
Fair, very fair.
I want to give a shout out to Chigozin Okonkwo, who's a really fun player.
Yeah.
They just had the one screen for him, but that worked out better than you'd expect it to, because he would just meet guys and he would bowl them over. 6'2", 245 pounds. I want that guy on my team. Like, playing fullback.
Well, I mean, the transfer portal's open, Brian. I don't know if Maryland career is going to get him anywhere. So,
definitely worth his tampering. But come to Michigan.
Oh, we're flagging tampering now. Let's let Texas know that they're flagging tampering, because that's a thing. Yeah, I mean, they edged Dax Hill, and it worked out for them because Dax was the one who got out there on it, and he goes to tackle, and he just gets run over.
Just a load to bring down. He's pretty athletic too for that size. Like I like him as a player. I think if you're looking for a move tight end, I think he's pretty close to the archetype. He's just kind of stuck on Maryland. It's unfortunate.
Right.
You know, Michigan did a really good job on Rakeem Jarrett, who just has two catches in this game and isn't really a factor. So, you know, DJ Turner has an interception, albeit on kind of a gift. Because as Alex noted, Tagovailoa is very much in the chuck and pray mold, where it's like, I'm not throwing this away. I'm never throwing any ball away. YOLO. And so he comes up with kind of a freebie, but, you know, Gray has a sack. Gray has a tackle busted through. Then the kind of the other catches the wide receiver's head. It was like, all right, that's fine. It's not great. It's not bad. But
they were running some weird coverages. And I thought Turner messed one up early. Turner might have been the guy responsible on one of the passes to the end zone that were wide open that Tagovailoa. Did I get it?
Yes, you did.
Yes! That he like just completely missed the throw. You remember there were two of those in the red zone on that one trip, and it's like, yeesh! But then I went back to try to figure out what that coverage is, and I'm still not sure what it was. I think that Moten had a bad game in general, but in that play particularly needed to chip somebody. And he was also kind of called on to be a linebacker occasionally when they would drop Ross out. And that didn't work either. So Michigan was trying to like fool the coverages. And it worked, too. You mentioned the cornerback blitz, which you know was a weird coverage, right? So I think that they were trying to maybe throw some more stuff on film and trying to practice some more things to give Stroud some weird looks, because that's, you know, the only thing you can really do against Ohio State is hope to confuse them long enough for your ends to get home.
Yep. I just want to mention this because I'm looking at it right now. S&P rankings, Michigan is fourth. They are behind Alabama, Ohio State, and Georgia. So they're fourth, and they're 8.3 points behind Ohio State. That is an incredible gap. That is just an absolutely massive gap for being second and fourth. And they've beaten number six. They've beaten number 12. They've beaten 3, which is Nebraska. Nebraska's 3-8.
Nebraska and Michigan State are like the same team this year, just different luck.
Do you know who number 34 is?
Who?
Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
So 3-8 Nebraska is number 33 of these rankings, and 9-2 Michigan State is number 34. And it's just like, so Michigan is the number 4 team in the country by this like achievement ranking system, how well you've played over the course of the year. They have the number 7 defense in the country after absolutely imploding last year. And it's just hard to be like happy about any of it. It's
because we have a sword of Damocles. I mean, this was the talk before the season too, that like you just have this hierarchy. Now I know Clemson dropped out of the hierarchy this year, but I mean they still have the ACC that they could walk through most seasons, and they'll be back. And Georgia's just jumped in and replaced them because Georgia's recruiting just as well as Alabama. But you have this system where you reward the teams that have an avenue to the playoffs. And if you don't have an avenue to the playoffs, you're going to have to make do. You're going to have to be a flawed college team. And I've been saying this all year. We're all kind of frauds. Like, we're all college teams. Now, in a regular college season, everybody's a college team, and Michigan just looks like a really good one. But, like, Michigan could have lost to Rutgers. Michigan should have beaten Michigan State. We have lots of data now on this team and where they are, and what they are is a good college football team. The problem is college football is carrying teams that are not college football teams, and when one of them is your end-of-the-year rival, it just kind of puts this pall on the entire season.
Yeah, it's the lamest possible structure for college football, and particularly Michigan's place in college football. But let's be happy and talk about special teams instead.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue. If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom-printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Have no use for your song. You're dead, you're dead, you're dead, you're dead and out of this world. You'll never get a second chance. Plan all your moves in advance. Stay dead, stay dead, stay dead, stay dead and out of this world. Run fast, don't stand in the sun. There's too much work to be done. You're down, you're down, you're down, you're down and out of this world.
Seth! Randy! Jason! I need hot takes! I need takes so hot they look like Mike Locksley after his team takes multiple red zone penalties in the same drive!
That's hot. He was not happy.
Give me your hottest take.
Jay Harbaugh is the best special teams coach in America.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's not a hot take.
Of all time. Of all time.
Of all time.
There it is. I buy that.
Right.
It kind of speaks for itself now, but I mean, people were, it's gotten to the point where you can't even, like, you know, be on the Jay Harbaugh train because everybody is on the Harbaugh train, but
you can still be on the train.
He's
people like Taylor Swift. It's the thing.
Yeah.
My daughter for one, and she has fantastic taste and she's a Swiftie.
Your daughter loves Taylor Swift and Jay Harbaugh.
My daughter's a huge Jay Harbaugh fan. She loved what Michael Barrett did. You know, he hadn't thrown that pass that well in practice. She knew, and then boom, in the game. Perfect. A dart.
Jay Harbaugh is the Taylor Swift of special teams coach.
There you go.
Hey, now we're getting somewhere.
We got there.
We punched it up. I love it, Seth.
Yeah. Randy, give me your hottest take.
Don't feel bad that Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo are going to be gone next year because we've got a guy, TJ Guy.
So TJ Guy does the one thing that neither of those two dudes could do, which is now sack Tagovailoa once, but almost got him twice.
You mean Tagovailoa? Who are you?
Tagovailoa.
I've messed that up three times on this episode, so don't feel bad at all.
Sorry, Talia Tagovailoa.
I like him because he looks like a creative player. Because of his name on his jersey, he looks like he's in an unauthorized commercial with football on it.
Yes,
like they have, like, they're like playing, it's like State versus Tech.
Yes,
and everybody says guy or person on the back of their jersey.
Yes. Yeah. So one time we were in San Francisco and we saw like a super hipster guy wearing a shirt that had a sailboat on it, and it was written on there San Francisco Sports. We're like, what sport? What does that represent? The generic nature of TJ Guy is our generic champion. And I say that because I have the golden freaking touch. So watch out. TJ Guy is going to be the guy.
Oh, that's you got a hubris, man.
I mean, it's brilliant because, like, Michigan keeps on losing their defensive ends to the NFL, right? Like, you know, we get this guy Kwity Paye. Ha ha, you can't figure out that one. Nope, they found Kwity Paye, right? Like, Chase Winovich. Okay, there's a lot of guys named Chase. Nope, nope, they found that guy and they took him.
It's right.
Guy. One of these guys.
You. Hey, guy. You're a good guy. Get in.
Guy is the
simplest. Google that, Scouts.
He's the simplification of Kwity Paye and Chase Winovich. We have boiled it down to a TJ guy.
All right. Jason, give me your hottest take.
Jim Harbaugh needs to stop recruiting high schoolers. It needs to recruit Hassan Haskins to return for another year and then put Donovan Edwards at receiver.
So this is the thing. Like, I'm watching basketball and I'm like, you know, everyone had all these expectations. These new guys are going to come in. We're going to pick up right where we left off last year. And it's like, hey, it's going to take some time. We're not there yet. And we start to realize what, you know, Franz was doing and what Livers was doing, what all these guys were doing and how they knew what they were doing. Obviously, we know Donovan Edwards is going to be great at some point. But how great would it be for one more year of Hassan Haskins? Just a 23-year-old truck just blowing up 18-year-old kids, like, left and right. Like, it's almost illegal. I know he's going to go to the NFL, and I know he's going to get a shot, but I don't know. I think it'd be cool to, like, say, hey, come back, and Donovan Edwards will make you a receiver. Make him a slot receiver for next year, and then bring him in as
running backs. Don't
that
make
crazy?
That much.
Well, I just – I like it when he gets matched up against linebackers, so I think –
Me too.
Yeah,
you gotta keep on with what you're doing in this game for him. All right, here's mine.
Mike Locksley is the most relatable coach in America.
he's watching his team and they get down in the red zone. And he's like, all right, good job. And then his facial expressions. I know those facial expressions. I am a parent of young children.
Yes,
Mike Locksley. I'm like, I feel you, my dude. Mm-hmm. I know that we've made fun of you for years for just being a recruiter who can't actually get anyone to do anything. But then I'm like, I can't get anyone to do anything. It's like, pick up the floor. He's like, where's the floor? You know where the floor is.
Yeah, no. The analogy is Mike Locksley and his team were in the red zone, which is essentially the checkout line at a supermarket. And he's like, all right, my kids are with me. We've caused
we're
no damage.
We're almost out of the store.
We're almost out of the store.
We are almost there. I can see the exit. I see the exit right there.
And then he looks left, and one of his kids has like a full hand in a tub of ice cream. And you're like, I don't do this anymore.
Yeah, so like they did a great job of cutting to Locksley whenever he was going to look like an exasperated dad, and I was just like, I can't ever make fun of this guy anymore because, like,
I love you.
He's
love
me.
You.
Yeah,
yes, like, you're me.
We are Locksley. We are. That's what it is. We are Locksley. We
In
are.
Fairness
Locksley.
To yourself, Locksley, Brian, you've never had a New Mexico tenure, so that's
that. I actually have. There have been potty training incidents that I don't want to talk about. I've been in New Mexico, metaphorically. All right. Hit up the Scarbuzz podcast view from the Cheap Seats. Hit up their Patreon. And when they come to your town, go see them. They're incredibly funny.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Is Jay Harbaugh the best coach on staff?
I mean, you just... I was giving my hot take, Brian, and we're doing our hot take segment right before this.
I mean, right? So in this game, they have two huge plays. They have a punt block that's based on essentially a corner blitz where they send some guy off the corner and the Maryland personal protector goes after him. And then special teams ace, I forget his name, Torrey, gets a free run up the middle and takes it off the punter's foot. And then, of course, you have the kickoff touchdown. Michael Barrett gets charged with a negative 2-yard return, by the way. That's how that stat works out.
What?
Well, because from where he got the ball to where Henning received it was minus 2 yards.
Right.
So they got to account for the yardage in some way because he gets a 77-yard touchdown.
So he gets minus 2 yard fumble to...
No, it's not a fumble. He just gets a minus 2 yard kickoff return, which I feel fair to Michael Barrett. So, but they pull that off, and that's clearly everybody on Twitter is like, save that for Ohio State. It's like, you know, Ohio State doesn't pooch kick like that.
Right.
You know, right. One thing that you notice in Maryland stats is like a quarter of their kickoffs are touchbacks.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to happen at Ohio State. Ohio State's just going to put it in the end zone because they have a Jake Moody equivalent.
Right.
So you can't save it for Ohio State because that's not going to happen against Ohio State. So if you've got it in your bag of tricks and you know Maryland has a tendency to do that, well, and you have a former high school quarterback who's also a credible guy who's already on your kickoff team, well, that's what you put together, and there you go. You got a touchdown.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they've probably had that play ready to go in that circumstance, you know, for a while. I don't know if it's all season, but it, like, that's the kind of thing that you prepare, and like, that's a, it's not like you need to like make the call, right? Like if they're pooching it, you get into pooch position. It's a very easy thing to see.
Well, so I feel like this was probably specifically prepared because Maryland had this tendency.
Sure.
So they do a lot of pop-up kickoffs to the right side of the field. So we'll put Barrett over there. We'll make this happen. And teams that are just trying to put it in or close to the end zone, that doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Also, so, I mean,
Michigan was fourth in the FEI special teams rankings before this game. They have not updated yet. You had a blocked punt and a kick return touchdown to that, and they might pass a couple of teams and be way up there. I'm going to skip the COVID year. They were sixth in 2019. They were 23rd in 2018, and they were 23rd in 2017. So that's the last four full years where Michigan is at 23rd or better four straight years, and they're in the top 10 two of those years. That doesn't seem like a fluke to me. That seems like consistent excellence, and the special teams coach is Jay Harbaugh.
Yeah. I mean, they've been doing it under three special teams coaches now, right? Because they brought in Baxter for a year, and then they had Partridge, and then they had Jay Harbaugh. So, I mean, there's a continuation going on in the program, but I mean, Jay has been kind of the through line in that whole system.
Because he was always working with the special teams. So.
Right. So I know I'm not willing to say like, okay, you know, Jay was always in charge. Partridge is a good coach himself, but I think that Jay is. I mean, he did special teams in the NFL too. So I would, you know, you heard my hot takes. he's the best.
All right. No real game theory events of note. The game theory stuff is getting less interesting because people are just doing the right thing when it's fourth and one.
Right.
So it's just like, yep, everybody's finally imbibed this 15 years after we started talking about it.
So we're dumping the game theory part of the segment?
No, or, I mean, but like if
we're 1 week removed from Penn State when we had like all this James Franklin stuff. But even he runs game theory correctly now.
Penn State is a special case. We don't have to dump it, but like sometimes there's just not much to talk about in this segment.
Sure, sure.
Not much to talk about. All right, we're going to talk to Jamie.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
JamieMackersJustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm just the day one of National Proofreading Week here in Ohio, and I can't tell if it's going well or not. I see some M's that aren't crossed off, but we're hoping for 80% compliability down here.
Well, I guess we will briefly touch upon what happened in the Michigan State-Ohio State game, which we usually don't talk about Ohio State because they just blow everybody out. It's not that interesting to talk about, but...
Well, it was over briefly.
49-0 at halftime and 56-7 final score. Michigan State gets their passing defense thoroughly exposed. And I think the most relevant thing for Michigan is if they can have that not happen to them, it's Ohio State. They can like score 21 points and hold Ohio State to 42. This isn't even in the realm of like win, like, or even cover. If they can just not be completely embarrassed, then even if they lose Ohio State, it looks like Michigan's probably going to go to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. I think from, you know, if you're trying to sort of like not be completely frightened by what you saw out of Ohio State yesterday, I think go back to 2017, kind of a similar situation for Michigan State. They were going down to Columbus. If they won that game, they could control the East, and Ohio State and J.K. Dobbins just rolled right over them from the start. And then the next week against the Michigan team with John O'Korn at quarterback, that game went down to the wire. So I'm kind of clinging to that sort of sequence.
That was a few years from
a few years ago, as far as like, you know, Michigan can hang maybe in this game because we just saw kind of a similar situation a few years ago where they did.
Mm, that was a defense that was like built to stop Ohio State. And like you can claim that like they've reconfigured this defense, but like that defense had Mo Hurst, and the number one thing Ohio State liked to do was to attack you in those A and B gaps. This game,
CJ Stroud, 32 of 35 for 432 yards and 6 touchdowns. I think we all knew that this was coming because we've seen the Michigan State pass defense, we've seen the Ohio State pass offense, but good God,
I decided I was going to rake leaves and listen to this game on the radio, like old fashioned, like got the boombox out there. And then, you know, the blowout starts and I'm like, oh man, like I've got all this time that I need to spend doing this and I'm going to be trapped listening to this awful game. And then I discovered George Blaha, who I've listened to his Pistons coverage before, but oh my God, his he's doing Michigan State. His description tells you that Michigan State is doing awesome. And then, like, at the very end of the description, it's like, you know, that one is a 12-yard gain for Ohio State. And like, then, like, oh, Ohio State is executing perfectly. Like, they can do no wrong. And it's, like, a completely wide-open guy in the end zone, which was so much entertainment value that I was able to make it through at least to halftime before I had to, like, find something else to pay attention to.
Yeah, Blaha's a little over the hill. I had to listen to a little bit of the Michigan State-Indiana game earlier in the season over the radio, and I sort of had a similar frustration. I really could not figure out what was going on. Getting back to C.J. Stroud, he's been lurking in the Heisman race all year, but as he enters Michigan week at DraftKings right now, he is the minus 200 betting favorite. He leapt over, as far as the odds go, he leapt over Kenneth Walker III and Bryce Young with this performance. And as if the, you know, gap between the two teams wasn't wide enough, Ohio State has a freshman quarterback coming in that's suddenly the Heisman chalk. I mean, yikes. I have a hard time believing he's going to win it because he's got the best receiving class, bar none, out there with Smith Najigbo. But you can't really divide it up amongst those three. So
he didn't make any pass in that game where you're like, wow, that's a Heisman play. Like, he's not the one generating that offense. His receivers were just that wide open.
Olave's touchdown pass to start the game, to start the scoring, was a Heisman moment, if you will, for a receiver. But he obviously doesn't have the numbers. But he went up high between two defenders to get the first touchdown. But yeah, otherwise it seemed like there was a lot of wide open, you know, wide open stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is a year where the Heisman seems especially dumb because it should just go to Jordan Davis from Georgia.
Yeah.
But he's not even being talked about.
Unless he beats Ohio State, in which case it goes to Aiden Hutchinson of Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, should we read the drive chart on this one? Because 12 plays, no. Touchdown.
For which team, touchdown. It depends. I don't want to hear the Ohio State's drive chart.
No, let's move on. Sick. I think we've covered what we need to cover from this game.
All right.
The next most interesting game was Nebraska doing what Nebraska does, losing a one-score game to a ranked team. They go down to Wisconsin 35-28. They are now 3-8 in the season, and I mentioned this in a previous segment, but I think Jamie might want to hear this. The S&P rankings that have just come out, Nebraska is ranked 33rd. Michigan State is ranked 34th.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. Well, and you know what? Nebraska is being weighed down by a special teams that I think is 126th in those same rankings.
Yes.
So I mean, you know, if they were a little bit more of a complete team, they might be up there. And I mean, we could start with that if we want. You know, they asked Frost if he was going to finally get a dedicated special teams coordinator, and he sort of poo-pooed the idea and was like, well, it's kind of more of a specialist issue, kind of throwing the kickers under the bus. And then they gave up a kickoff return for a touchdown to start this game. And then later in the game, they had a poor kickoff return that buried him in bad field position. So special teams, it nags them every week.
Yeah, and for Wisconsin, the story continues to be the emergence of Braylon Allen, who's, I think this was his sixth or seventh straight 100-yard game.
Yeah.
Yeah, 228 with a 71-yard touchdown in this one. And I think earlier in the season after we played Wisconsin, we were talking about how they just didn't have a guy back there. Like, they always have, like, a running back who's going to make them yards and who's going to take advantage of their blocking. And they just kind of had just guys, and they played Michigan because Braylon Allen hadn't been taken out of the box because he's a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 10 years of having, you know, whether it's – I'm going to probably get the order wrong here, but it's like Monte Ball, Melvin Gordon, Jonathan Taylor. I mean, when you add all those guys up, that's like 10 consecutive years. And from the start of last year through the Michigan game this year, they were averaging less than one 20-yard rush a game. And this is a team that usually gets 5 to 6 of those a game with those guys that we just mentioned. And Braylon Allen has 13 of those since he was inserted in the lineup basically on the 9th of October. So all of a sudden they have their guy back there. And I mentioned how high he'd climbed the rushing yardage chart last week. Well, he passed Chase Brown this week. So now he sits at fourth in rushing yards in the Big Ten. He only had 12 carries before October 9th, but he's 1 yard behind Hassan Haskins and like 33 yards behind Trevion Henderson. He's probably going to pass at least one of those guys since he's probably going to play one more game than one of those guys. And he just, I mean, yeah, if you play Wisconsin season in reverse with Braylon Allen as a starter from day one, I mean, who knows what we're talking about?
I mean, did you see his long touchdown in this play? Nebraska just had a linebacker run to the absolute wrong gap. And it was like, Nebraska discovered Michigan State.
Which touchdown, Seth? He had a 71-yarder and a 53-yarder.
The one that broke the back. The one that, like, ended the game, basically. Like, there was a 2-point game. Okay. Yeah, and
yeah, okay.
Yeah, I Nebraska just blew it. They're mad, by the way. They think that there should have been a pass interference on the play on the 4th and 20, where Taylor Martinez just chucks it up to the end zone. And yeah, okay, the cornerback got there early, but like, I don't know how much you deserved that play. But like, well, Nebraska just discovered Sparty's no, and like, they've been carrying it all year because they're the same exact team as Michigan State. Like, the two of them should just be 7-5 teams, and instead, we have this wild disparity because they both play these ridiculously close games.
Yeah. You do have to give Nebraska some credit in this game for what they did offensively against Wisconsin's defense. I mean, over 400 yards of offense against a defense that had only been allowing like 230. Nebraska gained 70% of their available yards. Wisconsin was number two in the country coming in, only allowing 26% of their available yards. And if you look at expected points added from a team standpoint, four straight Wisconsin opponents checked in at minus 30 or worse EPA. And Nebraska ended up with 5.28 expected points added. And that's with a terrible EPA on special teams. On offense, they actually almost had 13 points expected points added. Wow, that's a mouthful. My point is this, this was whether you look at the traditional box score stats or these wonky ones, they did a hell of a job against the Badgers on offense, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was going to they are always going to be an interesting matchup for Wisconsin just because Wisconsin's linebackers are awesome, and Nebraska's whole offense is linebacker mitigation, right? Like, they just move guys wherever they want them to, and then they try to run outside on you and make your safeties make tackles and whatnot. So I mean, that was going to be an interesting matchup because Nebraska is, you know, the best in the conference probably at just designing ways to get your linebackers the hell away from their offense.
Yeah, definitely. They had a lot of success on delay routes to the tight end, taking advantage of Sanborn and Chanel's aggressiveness. And they also, you know, the Badgers also had a hard time with the Torre kid. He had a huge game. And, you know, when they committed extra resources to controlling him, then all of a sudden Austin Allen and those other tight ends were even more open underneath. So,
yeah,
it was a pretty solid effort, pretty solid game plan. You know, keep in mind, they had fired four offensive coaches coming into this game. Right. So,
all right, Minnesota 35, the rotting corpse of Indiana football 14.
A rotting corpse. That's the nicest thing you've said about Indiana
rotting,
this year.
Rotting.
Oh, rotting. Okay. All right. Sorry.
I would not describe Indiana football as a rotting, an erotic corpse.
No.
They do take their shirts off.
But Indiana scrapes over 218 yards in this game. Minnesota almost doubles them up. Grant Grimal, like, they're playing either their fourth or fifth string quarterback, depending on what you want to, who you want to define as what.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. There's just no hope left here.
Yeah, things are pretty bad. They're actually, Allen is actually defending himself in press conferences about playing Donovan McCauley so much. So, you know, things are not good. I saw on Twitter that somebody has asked if there is an equivalent, you know, for 9-win Indiana when they have like a 9-loss season. And, you know, one, I think that's kind of like a rude question to ask. I mean, come on, everybody. You know, but two, no, of course not. That's our usual season, a 9-loss season. We don't sloganeer for usual football seasons at Indiana. We just take our lumps and move on. But if they can't beat Purdue, it's going to be a winless season against the Power Five, and that harkens all the way back to Kevin Wilson's first year when they went 1-11 and went winless against the Power Five. So, yeah, kind of a steep fall. And I don't really know if there's any light at the end of the tunnel. The offense is just so bad, and I just don't see too much hope for that side of the ball going forward. And they're going to have to replace a lot of guys on defense. I think they've got a lot of good young guys on defense, but there's no way they're going to be able to maintain what that side of the ball has done the last several years. So next year is going to be pretty bad as well.
All right. Iowa 33, Illinois 23 in a game where Alex Padilla goes 6-for-17 for 83 yards in a winning effort. Hmm. Brandon Peters throws two picks, which is part of that. Tyler Goodson gets off for 132 yards. But Illinois outgained Iowa 312 to 255. The turnover obviously helps. But you look at this box score, and it's like, I don't understand how this is a 10-point Iowa win.
I think Iowa also had a kickoff return for a touchdown.
Well, that would do it.
Yeah. But they were kicking field goals as well. Like, it was, as soon as they got into field goal range, it was like, let's run twice into the stack box and go again. And Illinois has actually been pretty good. They have, like, one great safety, and they've actually been really good this year about, like, just jamming the box and making you throw over them. They're not dead duck. I mean, obviously, they beat Penn State. Like, they're just deeply flawed Illinois, not dead.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've done a pretty good job of taking advantage of teams with shaky quarterback situations. You know, I mean, like, Iowa's no great shakes at quarterback. Clifford was hurt. They have Northwestern coming up, which is a game they should be able to handle. But this was a tough game to follow. I don't know if you guys noticed, they kicked this game off like at 1 o'clock or 1:30, some sort of like traditional time. And it was just hard to follow because all the other games were ending while this one was starting. And by the time I picked this game up, it was like basically tied at halftime. I really couldn't believe it. But the Iowa games, other than the Maryland one, have been very close to the vest all year because they just don't have the offense. They don't have the offensive line push, you know, to really get any sort of drives going. So a team like Illinois that's content to just, you know, pound, pound, pound and run clock, they can hang. They can hang with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, remember when Iowa was the number two team in the country?
Yeah.
Do you remember when everyone was jumping at each other in this segment to, like, be the first to say we do not believe in that?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. Yeah,
I found myself pulling for Illinois because that would have been their fifth win, and they would have had a good shot at a bowl game then with the finale against Northwestern.
I can't root for Brett Bielema to succeed there. Bert does not deserve it.
Well, Bert wasn't there yesterday. He was home with COVID.
Right.
No wonder they played so well. Purdue 32, Northwestern 14. Purdue again puts up 400 yards passing and does nothing on the ground. Northwestern again plays two quarterbacks who don't do anything. I mean, this is like a game where you can just tell. You look at the box score and you're like, oh, yeah, you completed 10 passes for 93 yards and the other guy completed 8 passes for 66 yards. How many of those went past the line of scrimmage? Probably 4.
Yeah.
And they were hitches. So, I mean, I don't know. We don't even have to talk about this game.
The scoreboard said "poon" for most of a quarter and a half. That was the only fun part about this game.
Thank you, Seth. That's what I needed to hear. All right, we need a ruling here. Is that you can't mention any moon type score lines until at least halftime?
Yes. Sure.
Because it comes up and it's like, oh, it's 4 minutes into the first quarter. It's funny. Mm-hmm.
It's
not funny.
No. I mean, no one brings
it
up until
halftime.
The second quarter at least, but.
If it's in the third quarter, we can start talking about it a lot. But it's got it. You can't wait till halftime.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
We had something going on in that Rutgers Penn State game, and people kept talking about how it was going to be like Roop or whatever. And I'm like, you're ruining it. And then Penn State finally cobbled together a drive right before halftime.
Yeah.
Wrecked it like talking about a no hitter in the sixth inning.
28-0, Penn State over Rutgers. Rutgers gets 165 yards of total offense. Penn State gets 407 by playing some guy
at Malik Maiga.
No,
that's the receiver he threw to.
Christian Velu.
Velu, yes.
I think it was Velo. It's a French word.
Velo, okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Velo. Yeah. This is the one place where he's like, oh, yeah, I can do that. So they moved on from Traquan Roberson, but obviously Sean Clifford gets hurt again. That might be material for next week's game against Michigan State.
They were actually saying too that he was sick with a non-COVID illness.
Oh, that's right. Everybody had the flu.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were all throwing up in the locker room, and like some of them threw up on the field. It was a really ugly game.
And Rutgers couldn't score 1 point against this team.
No. No, this game started out with 12 straight punts. This game started out with 12 straight punts, and after the first quarter, both teams were worse than negative 10 expected points added. It was pretty ugly. I give Rutgers some credit. I mean, on one hand, yes, they couldn't score any points against this team, as flu-ridden as they were, but I give them credit for kind of shutting them out during that stretch, because the field position edge is terrible, according to the final box score. But during that first half, when it was a punt fest, it was like midfield for Penn State almost, and like their own 10-yard line for Rutgers, and Rutgers just kept stopping them and forcing punts. And, you know, I thought that was pretty impressive. Of course, James Franklin did punt a lot in Rutgers territory, but they were sort of in bad down distance situations when he did it. He punted at the Rutgers 41 on 4th and 10. He punted at the Rutgers 44 on a 4th and 7, and he did another one on a 4th and long. So those were the drives that Rutgers stopped him on, but he kind of knew that Rutgers can't move the ball against us. They're able to execute the punt and downing, you know, pretty well, because unlike a Scott Frost team, they have a special teams coach, and they can kind of do some things well in that regard. But so I gave Rutgers some credit for it being 0-0 there for the longest time. But yeah, you're kind of right. The fact that they couldn't get anything going against the flu-ridden team is kind of bad.
All right, well, that concludes the Big Ten's penultimate week of action. We'll talk to you next week, Jamie, maybe.
Sounds good, guys. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah, bye.
Listen to the MGO podcast. I am Seth Fisher, along with Brian Cook, Sword of Damocles, Tongo Tiova. Oh, I screwed it up! Ah!
You gotta keep it! You gotta keep it out! You're keeping it!